I'm super happy. Are you happy? Welcome to the Be You, Find Happy podcast. Here you'll find tips and tricks to inspire you on your way to happiness, to live a courageous life of authenticity, and learn how to speak your truth with grace. I'm Michaela Johnson, and welcome to our podcast. Thank you for tuning into this podcast. If you are new here, you will find all things fun, hippie, woo-woo, and metaphysical, plus happiness. I just can't tell you enough how much I appreciate you tuning into the show every week, and I try to bring you the most fabulous guests imaginable. If you are craving more happiness after listening to this podcast, check out beyoufindhappy.com, where you'll find all sorts of tangible tools, tips, tricks, and resources to incorporate more happiness in your life. Learn to speak your truth with grace and live a courageous life of authenticity. And remember, if you like this podcast, please click subscribe. Chris, welcome to the Be You, Find Happy podcast. You've got your own amazing podcast, and I'm super stoked to have you on today because this kind of all worked out. We were able to, make it happen last minute, and I'm just really excited to talk about some of the brilliant stuff that you've got going on in your mind and via your Instagram and all that good stuff. Can you share a little bit with the listeners, like how you kind of, got to where you are today doing what you're doing?
Yes, absolutely. How are you? And thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate you. Yes, I'd be happy to. So I am 36 years old at the moment, born and raised in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I more or less, all I knew growing up is that I wanted to create things and I wanted to, just get to a place where I knew I didn't have to work. I guess at a desk job, maybe.
An 8 to 4, 8 to 5.
Yeah. 8 to 4, 8 to 5 type situation. And hold on 1 second. I need to turn this down. So I knew that I didn't want to have like a conventional job thing going on. But what I also knew is that I was very analytical and computer centric minded, if you will. You know, just kind of like I just process things always a bit differently, I feel.
Like a little bit of a starseed, like you were just born with this knowledge.
Kind of. You know what I feel like? I remember being from a very young age and just knowing, how do I know if everybody else feels the way about themselves inside as I do? Like just being very acutely aware of the possibility of my experience being different from yours, whether better or worse. So I was always kind of like surprised when I hit milestones in my, you know, athletics or just stuff I was doing when I was younger that made me realize, oh, wait, most people can't do this. So it wasn't so much that I felt like I had a knowledge. I mean, maybe it was like that, but played out in my mind is that I just try something and it works until it works and then I figure it out. And if I couldn't, it was almost like, no, I can figure this out. I'm going to do it. I never really just felt at a disadvantage. And I think that partially has to do with my height, but also my parenting and my upbringing and, just how I was raised. So
your podcast is called 6'7". You really are, aren't you then?
Really 6'7". Yes. I'm usually the tallest person, you know.
So this is a funny story. I actually grew up in a family that was in the Guinness Book of World Records forever ago for height. And so, I'm kind of in a family of giants, and I actually had a family member pass away not too long ago last year. And, at the funeral, they all had to get the, you know, extra special like add-ons to all of their attire. Uh-huh. Because they are so ginormously tall. And, now the downside to that is that, they weren't always able to play sports and do things like that because of their hearts. So it's kind of an interesting thing that you would be 6'7" and I grew up in a family of giants.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah. That's very fascinating.
My brother's 6'5", so, and I'm almost 5'10". So
Oh, wow. You're very tall.
Yep.
You're taller than my mom. Were you a volleyballer or a basketballer or a not sportser?
You know, everybody really wished I didn't choose cheerleading.
You're like, I want to play the bass. No, not her, please. Can I play the fly? No, definitely not her. You can stand over there.
Yep. So now, I never flew. Not ever once. But yeah, so it was kind of a letdown, but whatever. Now in hindsight, I wish I did play volleyball, but that's all right.
Yeah, bumps at Spike.
Yep, exactly. But so yeah, maybe it is that you did have kind of that taller perspective on life, like you say, on just like maybe a little bit of a confidence or something within you to just kind of try, even if maybe perhaps.
Right. And you know what I also think it was too? I think everybody's experience is so unique to their own microcosm of their reality that it's not more or less important than everyone else's. It's just different. And we can't assume that ours is extrapolatable across everybody else's in a way that we should be able to understand. You know what I mean? We have to kind of like respect the fact that maybe there's just things that other people grew up with in a way or that molded them in a way that's different from you. And what I realized that is when I was traveling overseas and I remember talking with a friend, I think it was female, she was female, and it hit me that I never really have ever been physically afraid for my, like to get mugged or something, as simple as that, right?
Right.
It's like, I'm the last person anybody.
Nobody's picking
and not because I'm like a menace. I'm just tall and I'm kind of jolly. Right. And I'm like, okay, not him. Everybody would notice. But I didn't realize that I had that going for me until I was, I don't even know, like, you know, almost in my 20s. And I just remember being like, whoa. So now I kind of get it. Cause I'm like, why people be so afraid? Like, I watch too much TV. Like, you just walk and nobody bothers you. But right. That's my built in perspective. And I feel like there's plenty of people who are 5'7" or 4'7" who haven't gotten mugged. You see what I mean? So it's not to say that one applies to the other. It's just that I was expressing my personal one on my perspective, if you will, on top of everyone else is like bugging out. Like, why y'all freaking out so much? It's fine. Just walk. Who cares if it's dark? I'll be walking at like 4 a.m. It's pitch black. But people find that scary. And it's just so foreign to me to think of that as scary because it's quiet outside and it's chill. So all that to say, I think that I just grew up in a way that knew that there was no solution outside of my grasp. Right. And I grew up with a strong faith, you know, with my family raising me in this way. So it was just, you know, I mean, I have experiences where my sister was diagnosed with a giant, like not uterine cancer, but some sort of cancer in and around her bladder area that was the size of a golf, like a coffee mug or whatever.
Wow.
That like completely healed itself and disappeared within a matter of weeks. From like, she's probably going to have a catheter for the rest of her life to here she is 30 years later, almost like doing.
Wow.
So we've had those types of experiences. So, you know, when that happens, when you're like 12, there's nothing that happens later in life that's like, God isn't real. And like, everything's just spinning for no reason. It's like, no, there's purpose and power and words and intentions and prayer and things like that. And that just helped me kind of always have a, you know, a bigger than me jacket I could always run to when I felt like I wasn't strong enough to get something solved, I guess, spiritually. Well, but
I totally agree with you. And I think mindset and the approach that we take to problems is a big part of it. One of the reasons that we connected is because I stumbled on one of your many incredible videos, and you put these out, by the way, in such a neat way with the humor and all of that, that they're just so relatable. So funny. And I think you definitely have a gift and a talent for that. How do you think that, as far as your kind of perspective on life this way, how do you think that kind of drove your direction to stand up for kind of some of the truths and stuff like that, as far as, you know, vaccines and, you know, masking and all this kind of stuff.
It's because I realized, yeah, that's a great question. So without getting too far into the minutiae of exactly how I arrived here, spending 10 years working in Hollywood in Los Angeles gave me a perspective that was just unique to the television screen, what comes out of the screen and how all of that works. And I worked in that industry and I had success in that industry. So, and I understood like the invisible, you know, wall in that industry after a certain point. But you, for me anyway, it just kind of became a giant lesson, a 10-year lesson in how image, the power of the image can adapt and morph and change and psychologically introduce concepts that end up becoming practice, where they were just thought or concept that turned into practice through behavior modification over time, that I'm like, people don't know how the things that they're watching can so very easily be manipulated, because like I can make a shot like that look completely different in like 15 minutes, you know, in my apartment, you know, it's like the technology was such a, had such a massive, grasp into the reality of so many people in my life that I just realized, A, most people don't know nothing about technology, and B, most people don't know nothing about how Hollywood works. So when I see these industries merging and converging, it really makes me go, well, okay. So I really wasn't trying to become like a grassroots doctor here or nothing, but people need to be aware of what's being injected into them, because some people are, and some people very much have made their conscious informed choice to sign up for this, which is their right to do. And I respect that, I guess, but you know, for those people who like really feel like they need it, I respect the right that they have the right to choose. Right.
Right.
But for a lot of people, they're not in a position of being informed to consent to anything.
Right.
And it starts with the bigger lie. And, you know, if, you know, if any of your listeners have ever counseled their best friends and their girlfriends from high school and college on that man they shouldn't have been dating at the time, and only to have 6 months later them come and say, I told you so. I couldn't see it at the time. Well, yeah, you couldn't, but we could see it, right? These patterns that develop in bad business practices don't like turn overnight, right? So you don't have a company such as one of the big four current available candidates on the market having a 40-year track record now being verifiably convicted of in court as to putting cancer-causing agents in baby powder, affecting infertility at a rate that we can all actually see. Like, let's stop for a second and look with our eyeballs. Do we know anybody who's suffering with infertility issues? Almost everyone would raise their hand. That's because we have 40 years of that pre-effect being sprinkled on the booties and rooty tooty fresh and fruities of all the people under the Johnson & Johnson commercial market demographic. And they was just paying all the fines. They were getting fined billions and billions of dollars this whole time for you know, breaking regulations, skipping protocols, all this stuff. And they just considered that a line item in their bigger budget. If we make $500 billion and have to pay $15 billion, cool, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Operating losses.
Wow.
And then they get proven guilty in court. Then they basically just stop selling it in the country that was they were charged in, but keep selling it elsewhere. And then they add a whole new category to their repertoire of a type of product that they've never made before in the middle of a pandemic where everybody's being furloughed and laid off. And they're hiring, you know, they're like working in the inverse direction to come up with a solution in record time, trying to save the lives of the lives they didn't care to save, or the progeny that they didn't care to save of the lives that were being born for the last 40 years.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I mean, is it, if they really cared about lives, they would have come out with some free vitamin D drops for everybody in the entire nation.
Absolutely. I mean,
and what's mind-blowing is how far people are disconnected from reality, like how trusting they are of people who are totally driven from a financial standpoint with no real attachment to the outcome of your life or well-being.
Right. And you know why that is, though? It's not because people are idiots.
I just keep thinking they're like, this is some upside down clown world.
It is. Well, it is. That's for sure. The reason is because people don't know how it works, how actual anything works. If I say, tell me how, if I text you right now, how does the, okay, I'll talk to you on Skype at 5:30, get to from my phone to your phone. I'll give you $100 if you can tell me. Most people couldn't do that. Because they literally don't know how the phone in their hand technically works.
Right.
You know, I pay this company this thing and then it shows up. That's it. But to understand just how complex sending a K, like somebody says, okay, I see a 530, K, send, like that one K. It was like 100 computers. It went through 100 computers all up and through the ocean and back like twice.
And so maybe this is what sets me apart is I'm like a total investigator. Like I was always the kid that was like, but why? But why? You know,
you were that kid.
I was so that kid in like the worst way.
But why? The butt wipe.
Yeah. But, you know, what's weird is I even just watched a program, and I don't watch TV. I read a lot of books, but I recently watched a program that explained how the cloud worked. Mm-hmm. And I don't think most people realize it is actually a wire in the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
a whole wire. A whole, like they got everybody out here, like we on Mars. We was live streaming from the moon 50, 70 years ago.
Right.
But we got a wire to get your slow T-Mobile over to their slow Vodafone. It's like, got it. Okay.
Well, and then it makes you just question how much you know, like I recently saw a thing with, what's his bucket that landed on the moon?
Buzz Aldrin.
Yeah. And he's telling that little kid.
Yeah. I saw that video just earlier today.
Yeah. So she says, you know, why did we land on the moon? And he's like, well, did we?
Right. And here's the thing, you know, like I used to clown my dad the hardest time. Like I speak a lot about gut feeling and intuition and how that's really the like last resort of your body's logic center is your gut feelings.
Oh,
and
boy.
Culture has taught us to override them and explain them away and, you know, fact check them and all these types of things. But the reality is the gut feeling was there from day one. And that's been like, don't go near that cave. Don't touch that dead carcass. You know, don't eat that berry. These are the things they all got us all here, right? So we got to validate the gut feelings. And so when you're talking about just this whole everything, just everything that we've been dealing with for the last 12 months, I feel like people in their gut know, you know, something's off, right? Who knows
Absolutely.
What it is, but something.
Right.
And then you hit a place where the conversation about what it could or couldn't be is not allowed to be had. It's like, free speech.
Right. No. That's just done, censored, blocked, silenced, which makes me question it even more. So if it's that suspicious that they have to block it because the truth would be so incredibly powerful. I mean, doesn't that wake anybody up?
It should.
I feel like that alone.
And think of how all the ways that they don't actively block it, but they basically ideologically, you know, verbally block it with the moon landing as an example, because the point I was trying to make with that story is that my dad used to always say, you know, I was born in 1955. When I saw that moon landing, when I was 14. It's like, I ain't buy it. Like, what? I was like, Dad, what are you talking about? He's like, he's like, I looked at it and I was fascinated, but I was like, that don't look right. I don't know what that is, but that don't look like, I just don't buy it. He didn't even know how to explain it at the time.
And
I used to clown. I used to get on him, but like, my dad is a total nut job, y'all. Guess what? Y'all go to the moon. And then 2015 rolled around and my whole entire universe got inverted.
And how so? Explain why in 2015, because it seems like you're a little ahead of the curve here.
Well, yeah, thank you very much. Because in 2015, I had a 5-year run at that point, going from Green Face LA to being like, you know, having a commercial. Like, I didn't direct it, but I was a part of a team that developed a commercial that played in the Super Bowl in 2013. So I had Super Bowl commercials, big career commercials for massive companies, you know, music videos for hit songs and stuff like that. And I was able to see that, man, like, this industry is nothing like I actually thought now that I'm actually working in it. And at this level of the industry, almost everybody knows everybody else. And there's like another level over there that none of us can really go into. So it's like, it just became apparent that there was like something, there was a game within a game. That's what I was
saying. Wow. Like that movie with, whatchamacallit? Remember that one? The whole thing was the game. The game it's called. Yeah, that was a good one. Michael Douglas.
Yeah. Inception was like it a little bit too, because it's like a maze within a maze, you where they're targeting specific people. Like, oh, that's a whole other, you know, whole other podcast episode. But I got to this place in 2015 where I just stopped. I had a series of unfortunate events in late 2014, you know, pretty much all of 2014 that really just stopped me. And that's what I always used to tell my friends and family when I was learning. I'm like, listen, I'm not smarter than y'all. I just have all this free time. Like, I don't care about hustling right now. So I have an irregular job and I have enough money where I literally can just read articles for 5 months and then go do a video and then come back and read articles for 4 months. So it's like, right. I had a fortunate series of years where I was like coasting on all the hard work that I had done the years prior that I didn't sleep much during, you know, that was just grinding my absolute butt cheeks off to get where I got. And then I got tripped up, and I'm very thankful for the trip up, because it wasn't so much an ego blow at the time. It was more just like, oh, I need a break. Tag me out, coach. Like, I need to sit on the bench. I'm tired.
Right.
And that just gave me, my father actually had sent me this documentary series at the top of the year that just really piqued my interest about the greater context from a spiritual kind of like a faith-based approach, just how he had grown up, just something he had seen. And I'm like, I need to investigate this because I know that guy and I work with this other guy. And this is crazy because that makes sense based on what I was seeing at the time. You know, I had all these prior experiences in my hard drive.
Oh,
my
God. Yeah, dots connecting now.
That dots could connect in a way that just was unique. So I didn't like exploit that in any sort of like malicious way, but I just used it to help confirm the things that most people read and be like, well, who knows if this is just some article on the internet. It's like, I can tell you that I was sitting at that dude's house, and that's probably accurate what this is saying. You know, I just had this vantage point, and that's it. No, no difference. So that led me to eventually rediscovering the narrative of the moon landing. Do you know that it is the official NASA word that we have lost the footage because somebody taped over it because it was accidentally labeled? Like, so hold on. The most important discovery of all of scientific humankind was mislabeled. Like, somebody and put the wrong title on the moon landing footage. And then some interns say, oh, yeah, we got a new blank reel that has something labeled on it, but I guess we can record over it. Nobody checked it when they put it in the new system and just recorded over the whole thing so that we can't analyze it 70 years later with the technology we have now. Like, you can look at a movie from the 90s and be like, whoo, who did the CGI there? Yeah, good luck with doing that in the 70s or 1960s. And then, and then they say we lost the technology to get there again, because they're always asked, why haven't you gone back? And then eventually Buzz Aldrin is just like, I'm tired of lying to these little 9-year-olds.
Yeah.
Tell you what the deal is. 9-year-old must sound crazy, so I can just explain it away as alcohol, but you heard what I said there in the middle of that rant. Because they want to say, they're allowing it out. The only reason we know about it is because they let us know. They kept it a secret since the 60s. except for people who had hunches, gut feelings. I was just like, I mean, I see it, but how are we on the, explain to me how I can get a long distance phone call to the moon in 1969, but I can't sit at the top of Mulholland Drive where all the celebrities live in Hollywood today and get a T-Mobile, AT&T, or a Verizon signal.
Right. Like, right. It's perplexing at the core.
You mean to tell me that when I'm FaceTiming somebody in high definition, billions of bytes of data are flying around the world now, intermittently with like all kinds of bandwidth issues. But in 1969, we got a clear, crisp phone call. Okay, got it. That's the story we're telling. I like this game.
You know, I'd never thought about the phone call until just now.
The spacesuits is what got me. I read this. It's called Wagging the Moon Doggy by Dave McGowan. It's hilarious because he's like, me if I was an author, he's like joking the whole time throughout the book about how absurd it is. And but he's referencing these milestones. Like JFK made this announcement in 60, right? I'm like basically trying to remember it accurately. 1960. And then by the end of the decade, we will land a man on the moon, right? All these failed Apollo missions in an atmosphere that we fully understand, only to get it right the first time, the only time, because we lost the technology on an atmosphere on the moon that we don't understand, landing and takeoff, perfect, first time, first try, right? That works out statistically.
Right, and of course. It does in the movies.
It does in the movies because that's what we all looking at. It's
right.
Because it works in the movies. But then only to like have all the, like, I remember reading the chapter on the spacesuits, how long it took them to develop like a workable space suit, like in terms of whatever they were projecting as the news stories of the day. Just looking at the time, it was like 1968 and they hadn't even figured out, oh, we finally figured out the suit after 8 years. Okay, and you got the rocket and the takeoff, launch, and landing.
Perfect. Nailed it.
It just flies above the incredulity lever of today, like a mile over the high jump bar.
Right, right.
They have new updated, you know, stories that just go. But I didn't think this way growing up. I was like, and right. It was these types of foundational core level, like, what? And he even says it in that book. He's like, the problem is that people don't have a hard time believing that the moon landing didn't happen as they presented it. They just have a hard time believing that the government will lie about something that big for so long. That's what they have the hard time with. It's not hard to believe that they just staged some Stanley Kubrick, right?
But right, right.
It's hard to admit, yo, this whole time it was lying.
Right.
And then they just hoping y'all just keep, no, we wasn't lying. I know we said that cigarettes don't cause cancer. Doctors said it. The Surgeon General said it for 40 years, but now look at what the Surgeon General says. They do. So
they were spraying that crap all over. What was the 50s to defumigate the homes and call and said it was healthy for you.
DDT.
The DDT. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, go into any building, basically in California, chemicals in this building are known to the state of California to cause reproductive harm. It's like, well, take the chemicals out. Like, why are y'all going to put a sign in the parking deck of the place I have to go to shop the parking?
Right.
Like, just take away the chemicals. Like, who's running the show here? Can I speak to you, sir? Like, that's the problem. It's that they'd rather tax the cigarette smoker than tax the tobacco company for selling a product that causes harm. It's like, because this causes harm and y'all chose to take it. It's like, yeah, but y'all put, for 40 years, y'all made my parents and grandparents. Like, forgive me if I, you know, I saw my cousins and uncles dipping, you know, Skoll or something like that when I was younger, depending on where you're from. It's like they morph a culture in a certain way and then play that culture off the next generation. The case that I'm always on now is cell phones and cars. So I'm 36, right? I was born in 84 and I was like 16, 17 before I got my first phone, really. And this was like right after the era in the late 90s where it was really cool to have a car phone.
Right. The Motorola. Remember? The pack in the
Motorola with the little buttons on the back.
Yeah.
Had a little.
My dad had one of those. He was like, antenna. He was the OG on that.
Yeah. You knew if you saw the car with the little wingtip antenna, like the limo, they had TV in that car. If they had that tall antenna, boy, their parents had some money. We're going over there. They got the so pool with true. The slide. Yeah, we're going over there. They got all the games. So we all know, right? But they sold that to our parents as cool, only to then tell us you're not allowed to be on it because it kills. Like, well, hold on. You gonna tell me you ain't on your phone sometimes, officer? Like, come on. Like, finding. Okay, so I shouldn't have been on my phone, but what if I literally don't have $185? Like, how is that supposed to teach me to do anything but hate and resent you for just not giving me a pass this time? It's like, I didn't crash, did I? No.
Right.
So it's just a whole, like, the psychology of it all is what I see is the big issue, because it's just become such a mind control experiment. That's honestly why I spoke up, because I just was like, I don't think people know this. I really don't think that they have the perspective to see it. And I think that that's been on purpose. And I didn't have it for like most of my life, you know?
Right. Well, and the manipulation too. So like, I know you talk a lot about this, like the problem, we create the problem. Mm-hmm. We allow the reaction to occur, and then we present the solution. And so they make it seem so, it's like being in a marriage with, like, you know, it's like an abusive dance almost or something.
It is. That's exactly what it is. It is it's being in a relationship with a psychopath where the,
right.
the government right. and the media are your psychopathic, narcissistic lovers that tell all the stories they tell are about themselves. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. they make you want to be like them, and then mm-hmm. they make you pay for your own demise in mockery that you'll never be like them.
Right.
It's just right. sad.
I mean, it's truly astonishing. Like when
you know the people who work in that industry and you meet some of them, you're in their offices and you can feel the energy. You're like, okay, this gentleman genuinely thinks that I'm not here in his, like, I'm not the tallest thing he's seen walking. I'm 6'7", right? I know you in your 5'4" behind seat, me standing right here, not gonna look at right. me. You clearly think you better than me.
Right.
I'm offended because I'm not gonna trip because I recognize what the time of day it is and not whose office this is. But at the same time, got it, brother. I get it. Okay.
Right.
So I have, you know, just enough cool experiences or scary experiences.
Right.
Just know that none of us are any better than anybody. Nobody's better than anybody. People are just in a state of empowerment or subjection, either one. And they're either in control of their situation or something's in control of their situation that's not them.
Empowerment or subjection.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that a lot. So what has me perplexed is how there are people who have seen the turn of the tide, who mm-hmm. like, you know, Oz status, like veil comes off and they're like, oh, but I don't understand how some people do and some people don't. You know what I mean? Like, what is the difference there? All right. Well, that's what I'm curious about.
To me, and this is where we kind of like step off on the lily pad of Chris's hunches that you'll have to just take and put in your back pocket and decide later if I'm right or wrong. Because a lot of the things I say, I can back up. Some of the things I say are inferences, and I'm like amalgamating tremendous amounts of time and data and experiences to come to these conclusions. But, you know.
Well, and I always say, hey, I reserve the right to change my mind when presented with new information.
New information. Absolutely. And that's maturity. I think that's really awesome. So I think that the reason that that your statement, what you just said is so, is because of spiritual eyes to see, or the lack of spiritual eyes to see, which come directly from a blender, a salad, an addition problem of a series of blessings and curses, if you will, consequences and benefits. Perks and predispositions of your direct parents and their actions, of your direct grandparents and their actions, and vice versa. So even within that, certain people's brothers get it and the sisters don't, or vice versa. So there's always a gene expression nuance that like, you know, incorporates your own choices and free will. But I just think that we're dealing with a whole salad bowl of different reasons for just about everything. So the large majority of the reason, I think the lettuce in the answer to the question that you asked as to why some people get it and why other people just don't, is because of a spiritual, like, just, I won't say lottery ticket, but almost like that. You just got it. You were born with it. I don't know why. I can't get into, I don't know. I try not to muse too hard on the things that I literally can't know and just focus on what I can and just understand that I'm not necessarily supposed to know everything. But I believe that people are just born with this ability to know it. Some people refer to that as starseed or indigo or any of these titles. Sometimes those titles have ulterior meanings to them, but by and large, like, some people are just born with this brilliancy to them, and, you know, that shines in an expression that seems to outshine others. Not that it makes them better or worse or more important, but they have ability to express their perspective in such a way that, I guess, bears witness to that shine. And those people, for such a time as this, are here on Earth today and are in a position to just be the same things that most likely their parents were being in the 60s and 70s. The people like, we don't want this war. Why? Because we're finding 50 years later that it was under false pretenses we went in half the wars.
Right.
And our parents saw that, and half of them was glued to the television and the other half of them was out there with the hippies.
Right.
Like, you know, trying to get ticket to Woodstock and things like
that.
But their parents made decisions that led them where they are. And I don't mean to, like, shift the blame on our parents. I just mean to say that, extrapolate that across your own children, right? Do our children's realities bear witness to our personal choices, mistakes, and wisdom, you know, moments? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we can't expect that that wasn't the case for our parents or up the chain. So I, you know, that usually helps hopefully alleviate some of the guilt burden that some people have, you know, over when they finally do wake up and they're like, how could I have been so stupid? Or like, why is everybody keep calling me stupid? I'm not stupid. It's like, listen, none of us are stupid. They all lied to all of us. Okay. All of us. Nobody didn't get lied to. So we're all in the same lie bucket. Okay. Let's just stop chopping each other's ankles up and go figure out how to get out this bucket together.
Well, and the other thing that's sad, and I think what's happened a lot in like the last 20, 30 years, is that people stopped, they started accepting like what they would read on the internet or what they would see on their television, and stopped doing more investigative work, mm-hmm. in the way of reading and scientific studies and stuff like that. I mean, when this whole thing came out, I started diving into like the 2000 years of coronavirus studies, you know, that there were,
yeah, tons because of.
And I needed to know more. I needed to know, mm-hmm. I was hearing the narrative from the television repeatedly over and over and over and over, and being a psychotherapist, you know, the fear-based undertone was just not jiving with me at all. I was like,
what the deal is. Exactly.
And so I started doing the research and the studies. And what was really mind blowing to me was I started sharing this stuff, right? Which is scholarly, like, mm-hmm. you know, from med pubs and stuff. And people would just, their cognitive dissonance was so intense that they were just like unfollowing.
You know? Yeah, it's crazy.
I'm like, whoa. Like,
it's crazy.
All I did was presented a fact.
Yeah. How that has turned, that this is where I feel like the straight up energy, spirit work, the dark stuff comes in, because they genuinely have figured out a way to bypass people's better judgment in every context of that word or that concept, and like vilify someone for saying, like, basically trigger someone's fight or flight response over some information, like over mm-hmm. like a link to the FDA website or something. Like
right.
That. And it's like, listen, just read it. Don't swing at me. I'm like, okay, put your wig back on. Don't swing at me. Just read this link. Okay. And then call me.
Then call me. You put together a PDF actually that had a ton of great stuff on the vaccines and whatnot. And I've shared that so much. I mean, that was just so helpful, because it's like, yeah, okay, you want it here. Just look these up, you know, and I know sometimes the language can be complex, but you can sift through it. There's an abstract, you know.
Right, exactly. You know, and like, you owe it. You owe it to the, like, my whole thing is, if y'all had known me, I'm 30 whole 6 years old. I know I'm not that old, and I know I'm old to some, depending on how old you are. But if I know that they haven't had a track record of helping me this far, then I know that I'm at a point where it's important for me to learn to help myself, just in terms of being informed as to what it is I'm dealing with. And if you've known me for 36 whole years, how on earth do you think I just turned stupid this afternoon? Right? Like, I wasn't stupid last week when we was hanging out, or last year when we was playing basketball. It's like, I'm not, like, don't you realize that I know that this is a tough thing to bring up? Like, did I not validate and qualify, overqualify what I was about to say 100 times over, so that I didn't trigger you to hear me out this far? But I need you to consider this, because I actually might love you and not just say that I do. Right. And sometimes that requires not discipline, but like focus. I'm not trying to discipline you. I'm trying to say, read this link. Stop telling me what you think I know or what you know, and you ain't even looked at what I know. So I can tell you what you know. You can't tell me what I know.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that I've had, like, this little mantra for all of 2020 after kind of all this stuff started unfolding was, like, speaking your truth gracefully is going to upset others. That's their journey, not yours. You know, your journey is letting them go gracefully and still knowing your truth.
Yeah, like, exactly. Because in their core, what their gut says is what that person just said equals the truth. And what you feel about that is the opposite of the vibration that they feel about it. And we're making you aware of that. And that triggers a fight or flight sense, like, feeling in people that turns them into, like, defense mode, as if somebody physically swung at them with their fist. And just in terms of, like, brain chemistry. So I believe that you're dealing with the ability to over excite that part of the brain, the trigger, like the over trigger, the trigger part of people's brains. Yep.
And not only that, but I do think that a lot of the foods and the kind of some of the toxins we've talked about, I think that stuff has, like, subdued, like, part of the pineal gland of, you know, being able to kind of tap into these spiritual intuitions or gut instincts, like we were talking about at the very beginning too.
You are 100% correct, because the alchemy is a long, like, what I've basically, what my research has concluded me to come to the synthesis of is that they've exhausted all the ways to alchemically change the human body. And what they realize is that the mind does drive the body. And I believe the spirit drives the mind, but you know, your spirit, soul, and body, these concepts of these three components that make up who you are. I believe that the you part of you is your spirit. And it's like, when, if you've ever been to a funeral and you've seen someone passed away, you're like, that looks like Uncle Ray, right? But man, that don't look like him. It's like, he ain't there no more. And you can see, it's just like a suit, like, looks like him. That's because he is gone. And we were looking at him this whole time when you looked in his eyes, because, like they always say, the eyes are the window to the soul. But your body is the suit that certain people are trying to basically genetically modify so that they can therefore patent. And they've tried it all of our lives and our parents' lives. That's what all that DDT and lead paint and asbestos and all this stuff was all about. Because I'm not saying it was like 3M's corporate decision to, you know, set out to find ways to kill people. I'm just saying that somewhere up the regulatory chain, the person who was supposed to have a check and balance was getting a check, adding to his balance or her balance, and just happened to green thumb, or what they call rubber stamp, something that they didn't really care to, dare to, or bother looking into, which promoted the cancer causing, you know, history that Teflon now represents. Like, all this safe and effective stuff from all these 3M's and Bayer's and, like, Monsanto's. And y'all still haven't figured out that maybe they're not really ever been about our safety. So I know I'm jumping.
Well, it makes you kind of wonder, like, did they start out with an evil intention, or was it just a byproduct of their drive for money, and then they just went with it?
I think both. Because I think that for different people within any institution, it's different things. Some of them are the latter of what you said. They just are like court capitalists, you know, low morals, high capitalists, drive type A, and then they get things done. The other type are dark individuals or born into dark families or infiltrated as good companies by people with dark ulterior motives. But I always keep in mind, like, when you say just started, keep that in mind that unless you're talking about the beginning of humankind, nothing really just started. So I believe that these industries were extensions of a much longer endeavor to enslave humankind. And this is where you get into the whole cosmic spiritual aspect of it. But that's why I can say, even though I can't like show you the emails that prove it, that yes, there are nefarious agendas, because whether you're talking greed, you have to like look past the sheer noun of greed and get to like why anybody would apply that in their life to such a large genocidal extent. Like, yeah, we can talk money, but like at the end of the day, I had not anywhere near that much that guy had, and I couldn't spend it all. So it's not that they really want more money. Plus, when you know people who know people, you know that all the people they say is the rich people in the world is definitely not the richest.
No.
There are dollars and commas that go. Yeah. And the commas and dollars extend, the commas and zeros, I'll say, in some of these accounts extend well past words you've ever heard. So I don't even trip about riches, because what I realize is that the people who they're constantly promoting as the riches are simply just the outlet valves for the bigger agenda. And they're using this arm of their Hydra called Bill Gates, called George Soros. It's just these extensions, because when you look into the board of directors and the corporate history behind pretty much the tech industry, pretty much the heads, it sounds very grim to say, and I try to present that in such a lighthearted way, but pretty much all of the industries, all of them, in terms of the categories, food and agriculture, medicine, pharmaceuticals and medicine, education, entertainment for sure, politics for sure, banking.
Obviously. Oh, well, I've been doing a crazy amount of reading on the schooling, and it's like, holy moly, the indoctrination, you know, like literally they were trying to pump out little factory workers.
Yeah.
With the public school system. Yeah. And I'm mind blown by that now. And then I wonder, like, how'd I survive it?
It's because we got version 1.0. It's like saying people, like, the technology gets more convenient, more fast, but also have with more side effects as it parabolically expands into more and more parts of our life. Meaning our parents, yeah, they had radio waves and radar, had all the stuff flying around, but they weren't as bombarded as pervasively as we are now. And so the, you know, we're just at this place where I feel like we have to understand the war that we're in. If we're going to fight, if we're going to win, if we're going to have any fighting chance, it's like, go step in an MMA ring and you've never heard of MMA. Like, if you're going to have any sort of fighting chance, we got to learn, okay, how do you block? What is a kick? Who's good at this? Like, all these things.
Oh, I'm all about finding my tribe right now. Like, yeah. If the things that I used to care about in human character, like, now I'm like, can you catch your own food?
Right. Exactly. You know, it's so funny you say that. I say to all my friends and my family, I say the era of book smarts is done. The era of the street smarts is where we're in. Yeah. So it's not, I don't care how many letters and degrees you got behind your name. If you don't know how to fix some plumbing, cleanse water, sing a song on a guitar, something. Just be useful in some capacity, practically.
I don't better care have how, some barter talent.
Oh, you know all the formulas in Excel by name? Great. Okay. Cool. You got a working computer? Okay. Put it over there and get the tallying up them potatoes. You know what I'm
saying? Yep. It's so, so true, though.
I'm right where you are, because I think, and that's what I think spiritual discernment really is. True spiritual discernment is this vibratory connection we have to God that helps us get to a place that has a heads up, and we don't always know why. And we're like, how did I end up with the ones that had the only brains in my whole neighborhood?
Seriously, last May, I started going total anal retentive with my seeds from my garden and drying them all out and storing them in little jars and labeling them, because I just had this feeling. And then wouldn't you know, there was no seeds to be had, not a single, not even any.
Yeah, it's so funny you say that. We did the same thing about this time last year.
Right.
Collecting seeds.
Yep. Yep. Just, it was a gut feeling. It was a gut feeling. Yeah. People and thought I was nuts.
Well, listen, they thought Noah was nuts. They thought Einstein was nuts. They thought Steve Jobs was nuts.
Yeah.
They thought Flava Flav was nuts. And he might be, but look at me. You're on TV and you're not.
So I really wanted to talk 5G, but we probably don't have time for that. Maybe not. All right. Cool. So you've done quite a bit of investigation about this. Like, what do you think it's doing to people? I mean, do you think that it's like literally blocking our brain waves? What do you think's happening with this?
So no, okay, good
affecting
question.
The immune system. Like, how's it triggering?
So what I'll say is this: understanding 5G is important. But first, to understand 4G, 3G, and this is the general electromagnetic spectrum. So when I say energy, you know how the energy can never be created or destroyed. When you look at any of these X-rays, gamma rays, microwaves, light rays, sound waves, these are just energetic representations along one spectrum, just one, that we give names to, and we put categories, and we piggyback pulsed information, ones or zeros, in a pattern that we've set up as a programming language. When you see a one and a zero in this pattern, and this means this, to piggyback on these energetic, like Morse codes, in a rudimentary way to explain it, that are traveling at the speed of light, literally along fiber optic cables through the ocean to the other side of the world, so that someone in the UK can hear what I'm saying. Basically in less than a second after I say it. And I did that with my family the other day. We were on a FaceTime and I was talking to my wife, who's with my mom, and they're out of town, but my brother chimed into my mom's phone. So she turns her phone toward my wife's phone, and I'm talking to my brother, and I said, okay, I want to count. And I said, 1, 2, 3, go. And he would repeat go when he heard me say go. And it was less than 1 second for light reflecting off of my face to travel into a phone, be digitized, be converted into ones and zeros, sent to a wireless Wi-Fi in my home that connects to a wire in my neighborhood that connects to a fiber optic wire in somewhere other in the city that connects to a, you know, a DNS server somewhere that connects to like a relay station that sends it through a pipe to the entire, you know, whole globe, the whole world. And we now can do the same thing in Los Angeles, New York, and in North Carolina in less than a second through the analog divide, meaning through that person's phone, picked up by that person's phone's camera, and then redigitized and gone all the way back. And then I saw that he said it with all within a second.
Wow. I mean, if you really think about that, that is quite astounding.
Yeah,
like super
is.
Fascinating.
It's very, it is. And this just gives people a taste of where we are now with this technology that you could do from the iPhone from 2014. So when people say, be careful about this 5G technology, this mRNA technology, or you don't understand, or you're a doctor, what are you on? Like the doctor, unless you graduate in 10 years from now, you won't understand this technology because it's changing, and it's changing so quickly that you should have caught on.
Be antiquated by then.
Right. You should have caught on back in the year 2000. We're 21 years into, you still haven't caught on. The technology is moving faster than education can really validate.
Right. Right.
And so with 5G, what you're dealing with, so first of all, 5G stands for the fifth generation protocol. So it's a nickname given to an allotment of frequency numbers that Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, Windstream, all the different service providers can have portions of this buckets. Like, think of it like Legos. Each frequency band, like 800.1 is this Lego, 800.2 is this, like 801.8 is this Lego, and they all get certain allotments, and those specific frequency allotments are associated with IP addresses that link to the 4G or now 5G on your phone. The difference is only that 5G represents a much, much, much larger bucket of Legos. 4G was like the starter pack and 3G was like the prototype, compared to 5G being like a whole dump truck of Legos in terms of the available IP addresses along the full spectrum because of how wide the spectrum is. And the issue is that the clandestine element to that is that while it's fully a consumer protocol, it was developed around or as a subset of weaponized technology using a specific set of frequency ranges within the larger 5G bucket. Like, just a few Legos within that whole big bucket are specifically designed to kill anybody who touches the Lego or suffocate anybody who's near the Lego. And that's kind of the troublesome aspect of it. So it's not to say that if you have a 5G phone, you're going to die. You can't. It's not none of that. It's not to say 5G causes COVID. People, like, they foster conversations on the internet where they promote narratives that aren't being espoused by the people raising concerns over 5G. And then they hyperbolize them into such a cartoonish ridiculousness that anytime people hear it going forward, they just relegate it to idiocy, when it's like, well, hold on, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that this poisons your environment by like radiating it just barely. But that's based on physics and math and chemistry and electromagnetic engineering. Like, these aren't like doctor and epidemiologist specialties, and everybody's over here like pretending like what we're dealing, like, you know, it's one thing to say I can read a number on a screen about how many people died this week or what the cause, or some guy in China ate a bat and here we are. But it's another thing to like walk out of your neighborhood and see construction installing new antennas near where you live. Like, right. That is happening. Like, I don't, like, there's a different conversation as to whether or not that's affecting me in the way that this guy on this podcast is suggesting, but it's to say that that is happening. That's observable. We can see it. People know that if you have an iPhone 5G and you live in a 5G city, or Samsung Galaxy Note 10 million or whatever number they're at, you can access technology on this particular protocol. So it's already live, but most of the installations for it financially are like the largest undertaking that most of these telecom companies have ever had to do, because you have to put the towers so close to one another compared to 4G towers. It's like, well, hold on. Everybody's more broke and y'all are spending the most money ever on something that none of us asked for, because most of our 4G phones work just fine. We just want longer battery.
Right.
Lower bill. Right. Like, ain't nobody asking for no faster anything. Just like, what can I download any faster than the memory in the phone can write the data to? It's like, who asked for this, right? But when you understand the bigger picture about the attempt to synthesize a form of control that requires an electromagnetic, basically police force that's all AI driven, you have to understand, like, oh, they need us to be in their system, to literally be on their system, because their system requires their Legos, which are all the tech, you know, is the physical type that laid in the ground. Like, that's the one thing I'm always trying to get people to say. If you don't know who owns the literal wire that go through the Atlantic Ocean to get your letter K over to your friend in the UK, then you don't know who really owns what you're talking about.
Right. You know, gosh, there was so much stuff you were talking, like, when you were talking about kind of like the social media conversations and stuff. I was thinking of something I read yesterday that said, McDonald's came out with the Quarter Pounder, And Jack in the Box or one of those competitors came out, or it might have been Arby's or something, came out with a cheaper version of a third pound burger or whatever. And it didn't fly because people thought it was less because it was like one.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
That is. But it just goes to show you how perception. It's like my favorite one is conspiracy and conspire. Knowing that they'll teach you that etymology and root words always connect. But the dictionary changes, even though diction is how you pronounce a word, not what it means. It tells you the definition of what something means, and it coerces a culture to associate the word conspiracy with the concept of people not conspiring, even though the word conspire is in the root word of it. It's like, y'all see what they're doing? They're just changing the language on y'all
they're
right now.
They're not even hiding it. They're just putting it right there for you. So on that note, one of the things that we were going to talk about as we were chatting before we started record was CAPTCHA.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Tell me about the CAPTCHA.
So my theory on the CAPTCHA is this. AI is only as good as the exercise it gets. And that's what they're always about doing is strengthening their AI. So when you say, are you human? We need to know. They're projecting the idea that cybersecurity and hackers and crazy bots are like random, you know, people with neon lights in their apartment or sitting at home with some crazy fast internet connection and just hacking into your, it's all them. They control the hacks. Okay. So they just say all that and then say, are you human? Help us as the AI know better if this is a bike or like a bus, because we, our AI is at 50-50. Oh, it's a bus. Okay, got it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, put together all the ones with streetlights.
The humans are training the AIs.
Yeah. Yes, precisely.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, it's been that way. That's what Google, I mean, they say, like, the movie Ex Machina is a really great allegory for what's going on, basically, and Westworld. I mean, and that's generally the underlying premises of both of those two movies. Westworld borrows the reveries, the human-like qualities of the hosts. I don't know if you've seen that world, that show on HBO.
I have not.
It's very fascinating when people like Elon Musk are like, oh, you wanted me to take you to Westworld? Well, if you live in the West, you're already there. He can say that on Twitter. And people just say, oh, Elon,
he's
just being silly.
Nutty.
Just being nutty, sitting on Mars, being nutty, tweeting from Mars. But what he's suggesting on Earth can't be possible since that's way less technologically difficult than getting to where he's sitting right now tweeting.
Unless you're time traveler like Elon, and then
The Musk, like when I started learning about his history, Elon Musk, his mother, and just like the whole folklore about their backstory. That's a whole. It's like this brother is not even a regular person. Mom was like, where y'all been, granddad? Grandfather Musk? Oh, we was out in the woods hunting for aliens. Well, we thought you were missing. Sorry, we were out here. Like, we're not going to ask why, but have your son go invent, I don't know, all the things that move the future forward. Great. He'll be the one. What's his son's name going to be? I don't think I can pronounce it. Okay, well, you know, it's fine. I'm not trying to hate on Elon Musk. I'm just saying, I wanted a Tesla.
Yep. Yeah.
The Tesla truck looks dope. I think his design sense is cool. I think his design, I think the people he hires as designers are cool. But
he said,
I just look good.
Oh, yeah. Like how he doesn't have the door handle. So it's all superly aerodynamic.
Yeah. It's like, it's cool. It's like, I like it. I'm down with it. But if I'm going to sit here and pretend like somebody above his pay grade can't just snatch him up and snatch all the autopilot Teslas and make them turn, drop, like, I'm not.
Come on
born
now.
Yesterday, I'm born, but I wasn't born yesterday.
I'll tell
I know
you what.
How this stuff works. You can anybody can click a button and shut your whole car down from
when
like
this,
a different planet if
down,
you want.
I'm banking on a horse, and that's that's where I'm going.
Yeah, I've heard that the trick is trucks.
I just had this conversation with someone about the shutting down the cars in a second just the other day.
That's what I've heard about. The people in the know are always saying, you got to find trucks before 1993 or 1983. I think it's 93 where they started using electronic starters, or even if it's not like an electronic button that starts it, You got to find cars that are old that don't have electronic starters. This is why I believe when you look at Black Mirror, another show talking about the future and technology, it's all old cars in that show. Like, ain't no regular cars. It's all vintage cars and empty streets, except for the one episode with Bryce Dallas Howard. That's the redheaded girl with the social credits, where it's all futuristic cars. But for the most part, it's all old cars. So what these shows are showing, predictive programming in this way, same with Westworld, is that they're showing that the humans were the ones suggesting the AI how to, teaching the AI how to replace them. And at the second you begin the conversation about the genetic altering of the, you know, like, everybody should know that it's not legal to patent a living original organism, but it is legal to patent a genetically modified organism.
Creepy.
So if there are certain patents for certain viruses that may or may not exist, then that should answer a very solid, simple logic question as to what we're dealing with here. Either the patent itself was illegal, or we're not dealing with something that's not genetically modified.
Wow. So
with that said, they're going for broke, I fully believe, trying to do this on the human scale. Now, I don't think they'll be successful, because I think they've had their work cut out for them up to this point, because all of their previous hunches about how, you know, civil wars-ish America would be at this point have all failed. They've been constantly trying to get Black people and white people to fight still.
Right.
It's like, most of us don't hate y'all, and most of y'all don't hate us. Like, I get it. Like, the TV says one thing, but real life experiences usually say that something very different, with isolated anecdotal exceptions, usually sure, based on people who watch too much TV, not because of some built-in, you know, predisposition bias, because we see anomalies to that all the time, right, across all the racial demographics. So it's obvious they're trying to get us to fight, and we're not fighting.
Right.
And they murder people who, like, have, you know, awful track records of behavior.
Absolutely.
And gas one half up against the other half. The other half guilty for being born in the skin that they were in, which used to be a privilege, and now it turned into a reason to call your Black friend just to make sure you're not anti-racist. It's like,
the rhetoric, right?
It's, yeah, like, it's like,
I'm so backwards, I don't even know.
Yeah, I know. And that's the part that caught me, because I'm always acutely aware of how they psychologically pimping out Black folk. But then when I see it happen to non-Black folk, I'm like, yo, they getting y'all too. Like, they really out here trying to lie to all of us. I had a friend call me around the whole George Floyd time, and just subsequently after. And this person was like, yo, I just want to call and just reach out and let you know that I'm here for you. Like, I wanted to hear what you need to feel validated as a Black person, and I just want to make sure that I'm doing my part as a white person to support you. And I'm like, girl, if you don't turn the dang TV off. I was like, I don't want to say this person's name, but I said, let's just say her name was Becky, right? Because she definitely wasn't Black. Although only Becky I know is Black. That's very ironic. But we'll say Becky. Hey, Becky, thanks for calling. And I realize how nervous you sound and how tough this call must have been for you. But, and I appreciate it, to be honest, because that lets me know you really do care. But you know why this is superfluous? Because you let me know you was cool back in high school. You was one of the first people to talk to me. Like, I already,
right,
already were
anti-racist
by
feeling,
being not right, racist. Right. Trust me. If you was the one being snarky to me at the time, you wouldn't have my number 20 years later. You can bet that.
Right.
So I feel like the gaslighting happened over there too, to the point where some people was like reaching out and like tagging me and commenting. I was like, listen, thank you. I do appreciate it, but I get it. You don't
still
have
to. Love you.
I got
still
people
love
out here
you.
Trying to be anti-racist. How does that work? Well, because I'm so not racist, I need to go out today and do an unracist thing. Hello, Black person. Are you disenfranchised? Wait, hold on. I'm fine. I'm just going. I'm tired. Can I go? Well, let me be anti-racist today. Well, you're actually being more racist than if you just kept walking. You know? It's like, how do you solve this? And this whole fact that, like, legislation.
It's a clown world.
Corporate is such a clown world. It's like, we can implement policy to undo the ideological policies that somehow made actual implementation just 50 years ago. Keep in mind, my parents was the ones dealing with integration at their actual schools, right?
Right. So it's like,
we still trying to make pilots? Like, we good. Like, just let us do us. Y'all can hang out if y'all are cool. But everybody knows that Black people don't like all Black people. White people don't like all white people.
Right.
Mexican people don't like all Mexican people.
Right.
We don't have to like everybody, but we should respect everybody. And
not to mention, I mean, just kind of going back to like human, you know, existence, like the initial caveman days. I mean, the colors of our skin were very important for the regions in which we lived. Like, you know what I mean?
It was, yeah, exactly. There's scientific premise to that. And what I always say is, phenotype can change in literally two generations.
I didn't know that.
I mean, consider example, I have, my wife is Swedish, right? So my daughter is mixed race, half Swedish, half American. But if she goes off and marries some Nigerian brother from Ghana, right, when she is an adult, and they have kids, and their kids, he's got some strong genes, then they're going to look like Black kids with a white grandmother, like a Swedish blonde, like blue-eyed, not blonde, but blue-eyed grandmother.
Right, right.
She goes off with some lily white ginger from Yorkshire over in the UK, somewhere over there. Or some, you know, other, and you know, whoever, right? She might have some fair-skinned children with a Black grandfather.
Right.
So it does. It really does not take that much to flip flop and mix. Now, I'm not saying that that's happened largely. I'm just saying we know we're such a mixture at this point.
Yeah.
Though there are probably pedigrees of some, you know, type more likely like searchable through the blood types than the skin types.
Right. But, like you do that. You're like nine things. You're like, I'm a 16th this. I'm an eighth that. Right.
Exactly.
You know.
So all of that's contributing to your skin, your eyes, your everything.
Right.
And
that's
when we all have like the BitTorrent data in our DNA to pretty much look any kind of way, potentially, you know, going forward in the future. So I just find that there, that focusing, over focusing on the issue is what they want us to do. Be aware of the fact that you're Black and you are disenfranchised. Also, be aware of the fact that you're white and you've been given a privilege that you don't deserve. Like, what? Why? Like, can't he just be Timmy and I just be Chris and we like playing video games? Like, who's focusing so hard on our skin types other than the television? None of us, for the most
part.
None of
us in real life.
Right. And again, validating some of my friends and family's experiences who have definitely dealt with racism. I've dealt with racism. I'd never forget. Like, it was a strange feeling because I didn't deal with it much growing up. And then I was in college and I was dating someone and their father was like, listen, we have a uncle here who's not necessarily cool with the situation, but I have spoken with him, and if he says anything to you or so much as blinks in the wrong direction, you let me know. And I was like, cool. But that was such a juxtaposed experience, right? Because I'm dating this person, her father is going to bat for me before I even meet the dude who doesn't apparently approve of me. And then I meet him and he's like, hey. And I was like, hey. And that was it. You know, it wasn't a big deal. But there, you can, you mean, I get a, you can feel people's energy, but I just, you know, my parents never raised us to focus on that more than the value in a person, no matter what their skin color. My dad, one of his best friends was white. My mother was, you know, she grew up in the South, right? She was like the, in the era of school, they had to like integrate with the white kids' school. So they all like came through an experience and ended up in a place that had them raise their child to just see a person for a person. And I'm not invalidating any individual's experience that might lead them to have feel a type of way about people with a certain type of skin color, because that's just everybody's unique experience. It's what we do with that, how we apply that, whether we recognize that both of us was being programmed and gaslit and socially engineered to feel and think the way about the other, so that 50, however many years later, 150 years, they can pit that against one another in a problem, reaction, solution scenario. So we're going to give in to it just because we feel this type of way, or are we going to not lend our energy there, but work to protect our families and work to help each other and reach out to one another and extend an olive branch so that people can, you know, understand each other. And because this is how revolutions are done. You don't read like Harriet Tubman, you know, helped a bunch of people in her revolutionary way by signing a petition with the Department of Health and Human Services and requesting a permit to, you know, it's like she didn't go through the top down system to get there.
Right.
So it's like all the people we laud, even the Martin Luther Kings and the like, even the Isaac Newtons and the Thomas Jeffersons and the Benjamin Franklins, right, of science, they weren't like just doing the party consensus science. They were like out there flying kites and thunderstorms doing experimental fringe thinking outside the box. And that has just been completely inverted today because I believe it's been weaponized.
Oh, well, it's truly crazy. Like, I'm working on getting my pilot's license right now in a 1947 aircraft. It's very rudimentary. And,
we got to talk about that. Keep that in mind because I want to talk about that aircraft specifically, but go ahead.
Yeah. So, oh yeah, that's right. We did kind of touch on that earlier before. But so what's crazy is that, you know, I was thinking about how much modern stuff that we have in the way of for flight and different things to help calculate, you know, just wind speed and just all these different things. But our grandfathers, great grandfathers, they totally cowabunga'd it. They were just bonsai, you know?
They were like, hold on that window. Unlatch that window. Right. Lick your thumb and stick your hand out. If your fingernail is colder than your thumb, like, then we got tailwind.
That's exactly what they did. And it's crazy. I mean, and I'm learning in a relatively simple aircraft. And even that feels, you know, more, I don't know, advanced than what they have, you know?
Way more, man. It's like our grandpas was the OGs.
They were like, totally.
We don't even care. We ain't got no health insurance.
Nope.
We ain't got no living will. We
no
ain't got
life insurance.
We gonna fly. We ain't got no life insurance. We don't even know what that is.
Right.
I got my prayers and I got my,
my
Jim Beam.
Yep.
But you know, that's such a good point because I remember the first time, I've always been fascinated with aviation and flight. And the first time that I got to fly in not a private plane, but like a personal, like a two-seater twin, like a Cessna, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It was for my, I think, 16th birthday. I was so excited. A friend of my mother is a pilot, similar to yourself. She's like, I could take you up. So we go up and I remember her going to the hangar, taking off the little tarp or whatever, and then open up the engine to prime it to begin. And I looked at the engine and I said, we gonna fly up in that? Like, I got lawnmowers bigger than that engine. Like, are you sure? I'm pretty sure my weed whacker has got more horse HP than this. I say 1.0. I got a 1.2. Like, sitting in the garage. Can you want me to go get it? I just remember being like, this is all it takes to literally fly is something this small. That was so fascinating to me because I just assumed it was like a spaceship. I don't know what I thought. And then we went up and it was cool because she let me, you know, move the controls ever so slightly for like 5 seconds while she had her hand on the control too. But I just remember it being very like thinking you can go anywhere. Like, it's the feeling you have when you have a bike as a kid. It's like, limited to the yard.
And I'm not coming back until it's dark.
Exactly. And I'm not coming back until it's dark. And it's summertime too.
Uh-huh.
It's gonna be dark late.
Game over. Yeah.
Right. So I
saw a meme that said, remember how our parents used to kick us outside until it was dark and then some of us just ended up on unsolved mysteries as nature intended? Yeah,
exactly.
That's like, totally true. Yeah,
go outside so mom and daddy can have some peace and quiet.
That's how we populated the world. Well, listen, this has just been so awesome. I'm wondering, I'd love to have you back at some point too, because we didn't even get to talk about 3D, 5D and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to set up another time, but, how can people get a hold of you? And of course I always put it in the show notes.
I'm most active on my social media on Instagram at 67podcast. But I also have @67podcast@gmail.com. I have a Facebook 67 podcast. It's on YouTube. What I'm finding is that they won't let me say everything I want to say.
Yeah, you're quite shadow banned.
I am. But what I find on YouTube in particular is you have to type SIXSEVEN space podcast because they won't let you use numbers until you have a certain amount of followers. It's a whole, like, whatever, YouTube. But I find that what I'm about to start doing is basically speaking on the things that I can say on these channels and adding trailers, loops, and like little snippets and links to view the full versions of all the things that I can't say, but host it on other things. Because I find that there's no point in kamikazing in your whole channel just to like say what you want to say. It's like, all right, the whole point of this isn't just to say I got banned. It's to hopefully reach people.
Right.
If you can reach people and not get banned, that's better.
Right. So if you can be tricky about it.
Right. Fortunately, I know how AI based and algorithm based and just how like computer science-y it is. So what I'm trying to do is more or less game that in my advantage so that I can say not what I want to say, but what needs to be said.
What needs to be heard. Yeah.
Right. What needs to be heard to make the digital book burning not burn so quickly. It's like
someone told me the other day they're a human encyclopedia. I said, well, you're going to be worth a lot of money soon.
Exactly. It's going to be like North Korea. Come to the library and the person who knows all the information will tell you what.
Play that book of Eli. Lay down and just start talking.
Yeah, exactly. Start talking. Stenographer Betty, come over here and type this.
That's sad, but it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. Well, listen, Chris, this was awesome. I'm looking forward to having you back on again. Yeah. And thanks for taking the time to chat life and all sorts of crazy clown world stuff. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, likewise. I appreciate you having me on.
We'll talk soon.
All right, we'll talk soon. Have a good one.
Bye.
This has been a BU Find Happy podcast. Da, 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 da. For more inspiration, check out our links. Whoa, is that? Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.